Thank you for joining the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. Dr. Thompson is the owner of Black Butterfly Press and Thompson's Literary Services. You have Raphael in Studio A, and as always, questions and comments are welcome. Please send them to dj@artistfirst.com. To learn more about Dr. Thompson, her literary services, please visit maxinethompson.com. And be sure to visit her past guests on the Artist First archive page. And now, here's your host, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. As you know, I'm coming to you live from the West Coast. I'm the author of the upcoming Hostage of Lies, which will be out on December 1st, 2009, and is available on Amazon and other places you can order online as a pre-order. I'm also the author of novels The Ebony Tree, No Pockets in a Shroud, Short Story Collection, A Place Called Home, best-selling anthologies Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before, and All in the Family. Also, I'm the author of The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells and Others, nonfiction books. Tonight's guest is Dr. Charlotte Resnick. And she is the author of The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. Good evening. How are you, Dr. Resnick?
Oh, I'm so happy to be speaking with you.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're coming on because some of the things we're talking about, building bulletproof children in terms of emotionally, I think today is more important than ever. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. I think there's so much stress going on in today's world. Kids have to have the skills inside to deal with the world, not just to survive, but to thrive. And that was really why I wrote my book, to help more and more kids get the skills which are inside them, inside their imagination, to help themselves meet whatever challenges they're going to be facing.
Well, Dr. Resnick, tell us about your background before you get into your book.
You know, I have a PhD from USC, and I'm an associate clinical professor at UCLA, but I started working with kids in the inner city in LA about 25 years ago, and those kids were in really bad shape. It was very dark there, and they really had to tough it out. They were depressed, they were sad, they were angry. And I just had to find a way to reach them. And conventional kind of counseling just wasn't cutting it. I really needed to find a way to touch their heart and move their soul. And I found through having them connect with their own inner wisdom was a great way to start them off.
Okay, well, that's great. Definitely the children growing up in South Central, they need more than bulletproof emotions. They need bulletproof vests almost. It's really rough. Almost every week you hear of a murder, and a lot of children have grown up seeing their siblings get killed. And
that's... They have. They've seen a lot. They see more than we want them to. In fact, I was there after we had those riots in L.A. a long time ago, and I went back in, and I really helped the kids kind of imagine what kind of world they wanted to create for themselves. It's what President Obama is asking the kids today to do, and he spoke to them. What do you want to create for yourself? And so just starting to picture it, just let your imagination go. Do you want to be happier at home? What can you do inside? And once they start having a picture of the kind of world they want to live in, then they could start with themselves, because that's where everything starts from, one person at a time, one heart at a time. And so if they want to have more friends, well, be a good friend. If they want people to be kind to them, be kind to others.
Mm, that's great. Well, what are 9 imagination tools to help children cope?
Well, I start with a foundation tool, which is what I call the balloon breath. And that's basically breathing into your belly, kind of about 2 inches below your belly button. Because often when we're upset or just normally, we're breathing very, very shallow in our chest, up really way up high. And what happens when you breathe into your belly button about 2 inches below is physiologically it calms you. It lowers blood pressure. It centers you so that no matter what situation you're in, you could respond rather than react. I had one little boy saying, you know, when I do my balloon breath, I'm able not to get so mad at my brother, because he calms himself. So then instead of, like, just reacting and, you know, getting angry, he could decide, wait a second, I don't really want to act like that. I want to make another choice. So the balloon breath is the first tool. It's the most important because it'll calm you, and it's the place where you start to do your inner work in a sense of going inside to all the wisdom that we all have and that kids have very early on. So once you have that down, and it's pretty easy to do, you then find a special place that you could feel safe, that you could feel loved, that you could take a vacation from the stress of life, or that you can do your inner work. And it's kind of, you know, you build it in so that people could come into your special place, but once they step through the door, they love and accept you just the way you are. So that helps if you've been having a fight with someone or your mom or dad's mad at you. Once they step through your door in your special place, then everything is very positive with them. And you could use that special place either to just hang out because you need a little break, or you want to go forward. You want to solve a problem. You're having a headache. You need to relax. You're having a fight with your brother. You need to solve it. So I have the kids connect with inner guides, kind of imaginary friends, like an imaginary animal friend that could help them solve their problem, that could help them if there's, you know, if they're having trouble in school. I had one child having trouble sleeping at night, and she had a unicorn come. I think she called it Miss Sapphire because her eyes were all sapphire and she was all white. And her unicorn gave her some sleeping powder that she sprinkled on herself, and she would say, falling asleep, as she kind of relaxed and imagined a beautiful place to fall asleep. And then you could even bring in a wizard. And the wizards come in when you need a little more magic, when you need a little extra help, or if your animal friend's not available. And the wizard is like a master teacher in human form, a little bit different from the animal that's more of a protector. And so you could call in your wizard. One boy had terrible, terrible spelling. He would get like 24, 25 words wrong in a paragraph when he'd have a spelling dictation. And well, he called in a spelling wizard, and the wizard would help him clean out his brain and help him remember the words. And week after week, his spelling improved. And pretty soon, he was only down to 3 or 4 errors in a paragraph. And considering he came from like 25, that was great.
Great. So what about receiving gifts from inner guides?
Well, that's perfect, because that's the next step. Once you have these helpers, then they could bestow gifts upon you. They could give you a gift, and the gift could be something that you imagine that's a physical gift, or it could be a word or a phrase or an idea or a thought. Like, one girl was feeling left out from her friends. They weren't playing with her, and her animal friend gave her a gift of a star, kind of a star crystal, to remind herself that she was a star no matter what. And she also received a gift of a heart of kindness so that she could be kind to these girls who had been a little bit mean to her. And even parents receive gifts, because parents could use these skills too.
And that's what I'm thinking. Life has not gotten easier. It's gotten harder each year. You know, I remember thinking about 20 years ago, oh, things are going to get easier and things are going to get better. But the sad thing is they haven't. The good news is that you have more coping skills the more hurdles you can go through. But choices are getting harder for people now because of the economy and the whole world system collapsing. It is really a time that people are going to need this, because I'm seeing just too many people that are a little bit too fragile for a certain age. And maybe what you're doing will be very helpful to help people have better coping skills later in life.
Right. You want to start out early. And about things being difficult for parents as time goes on, I always think it not only takes a village to raise a child, it takes a whole lifetime. You're not really done when they're 18.
That's what I'm.
You're a parent forever.
Yeah, you die or they die. You know, hopefully it's you first. But it's, you know, it's really like you have to sometime go back. And I'm seeing a lot of parents do this, and I think that it's not a good thing, where they're trying to go back and make up for what they didn't get to do while their children were growing up, in terms of not allowing them to live on their own. You know, I can understand if there's health reasons and major reasons for grown adults 40 and 50 years old, but
sure,
sometimes we have to, you know, be able to cut the cord. I think of the animal kingdom, that we're the only ones who do not know when it's time to let the bird fly from the nest.
You know, interesting, adolescence, we think of it ends at teenagehood, but it, for pediatricians that work with adolescents, they say that really adolescence doesn't end to the later 20s. So even in the medical profession, they're seeing adolescence as extending.
Right. I mean, I understand the cost of living, and people are, you know, because of extended education, childhood has been extended, and that part is fine, but, you know, I'm just beginning to see people that are a lot older that have not developed certain...
Sure, sure. And in fact, I do something when kids are afraid to leave their parents, and you could do this when you're older, of course, or go to school for the first time, or even go to a new school, or go to middle school or high school, or what I'll have them do is imagine to have them keep that physical connection. I'll have them imagine sending love to their parent in whatever color they want, from their heart to their parents' heart, sort of like on a beam of light, and then the parent sending love back, so that the child feels almost like a physical connection when they're afraid of leaving. So I can imagine when they're older, you know, push them out of the house a little, but tell them, my love is still with you. It's still with you. Wherever you go, you could feel me around you. I will be supporting you from afar. And think about what I would tell you to do, you know, to help your child, no matter what age, to make good decisions.
That's great. I think that's a wonderful thing for parents to be able to say, you know, I can't be with you, but my prayers can be with you, my love, my support, my encouragement.
Right.
But
right. In fact, I'll even have them practice this little, you know, love beam next to each other and then in another room, and kind of make a game of it so that the child feels supported and could actually feel that palpable love right there. And it just helps them so much. And then you were talking a little bit earlier about the, you know, even as they grow older, to have the strength inside. So I'll have the kids connect with their own heart's wisdom. And you could do this easily by just, you could put your hand over the center of your heart, sort of where your heart level is, in the center of your chest, and just focus on your heart and connect and ask what your heart's message is and what your heart would tell you for that problem or for that situation. And even a preschooler is, I had a 3.5-year-old doing this, you know, which is amazing for such a young child, but his heart told him to share with other kids. And then you could check with your belly and your gut feelings, because there's all this information and science now coming that there are cells within the gut that are similar to some of the cells in our brain. So we seem to, and the same thing for the heart. I mean, there's even some cases, anecdotal cases, of people that have heart transplants that pick up some characteristics. They like the same ice cream flavor, or they prefer, you know, something that their heart, the person who gave them the heart, has. So it's like we have three brains, and we want to use all of them, the one in our head, the one in our heart, and the one in our belly, and connect them so we get the wisest, we make the wisest decisions we can.
Right. Sometimes things look one way, and we'll make the wrong decision, but our gut is telling us, no, this person isn't somebody I should work with, or this. And learn, I like what you're saying about learning to trust, and if we could teach children young to learn to trust the instincts, and like you say, the gut, the heart,
right,
and the head, and have them in sync. Because sometimes what we think looks good on paper isn't always what it's cracked up to be.
Right, right. You really want to develop that intuition starting in a young child, so by the time they get older, they could trust themselves. If they could trust themselves, they're more likely to know who to trust in the world as well.
Mm. And that would be a really good one, particularly with you know, just so many things that are, you know, from child molesters to kidnapping to, you know, that kids have to kind of have that sense of everyone is not their friend.
Right, and I grew up on the streets of New York City, so that was built into me. You know, if I'm walking down the street and don't feel good, I just go the other way. I don't stop and think about it. I just don't go there. Or even if you walk into a restaurant and you just don't feel comfortable, you just leave. You don't have to wait and find out why.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids have to trust themselves. And what helps is if parents are very honest with their children. Because sometimes kids are picking up their parents' feelings, you know, and the parents are denying it because they're trying to protect their child. You know, like, Mom, what's wrong? And then Mom will say, oh, I'm fine, when she's not fine. You know, maybe she got fired or she had a bad day at work or there's a fight with her partner. So I would be honest. You know, kids don't need lots of details, but just you could be honest and say it was a tough day. Thank you for, noticing. But things will work out, you know. We're going to work everything out.
I guess that is always the message, I think, that we send to our children. When we can't cope, we send a message that things don't work out. But if we cope through hard times, then we're sending a message that things will work out. You know, it's great to say, oh, things are going to work out. But if we go commit suicide...
Right, right. No, of course, you have to be the role model. Yes, that is so important. That what parents do is much more important than what they say, because kids learn from what you do. They will follow your actions. And so the best thing, I tell parents all the time, the best thing you could do for your child is take care of yourself. And if you make mistakes, that's okay. Let them know. And you're showing it's okay to make mistakes. Everyone does. We're human. Mm-hmm. Apologize if you mess up with them. It's okay to apologize. I think the old school is, no, you know, you have to always be right as a parent. But you're human. You're just learning. Being a parent is as new as having your first child. Not many people teach you in school how to be a good parent.
That is so true. As I say, the children don't come with manuals. And it's, you know, being a parent now is so different than being a parent in the 50s and the 70s. And, you know, here in this new millennium, you're dealing with cell phones and...
Right, right.
MySpace, Facebook, young people are on it. And I know my niece, she told her mother, I wish you would just stay out my business and just go on and put it on MySpace, you know, something about her breakup with her boyfriend. And
right.
So this is coming to the language, is shaped. I was listening to a comedian last night, and she was saying the new culture of Caucasian children imitating, you know, I'm not trying to make fun of black people. I'm saying this was a white child in an all-white community, and how they love hip-hop so much that they talk.
Right, right.
So if we could even find a way that kids, the same way they have embraced hip-hop and love the language, and even though they come from, you know, some come from very rich backgrounds, but they like to talk like they came through the hood, if we could embrace a way that kids could embrace a thing of being strong enough to deal with life and the rough things that can happen to you, you know, like 9/11. Who would have ever thought we would have
right.
to do something like that? Or the L.A. riots. I was working the streets as a social worker here in L.A. during that one.
Right.
I almost couldn't even get home for walls of fire coming around different streets. And I would drive up one street, couldn't get through there because the fire, you know, it's almost like the wildfires here. So, I mean, there's the only thing we know in life for sure, besides be aboard, that we're going to die. But in between, there's so many uncertainties and so many things that happen. How can we raise children that don't have nervous breakdowns, that are able to make it?
That's what we need to do. We have to strengthen them from their core in. And doing the balloon breath, it is kind of a form of meditation. It's just connecting with yourself and centering. And just developing that strength. Sometimes I work with kids' fears and confidence. Like, one girl was afraid of doing terrible in school. And so I asked her where her fear was. And her fear was black, and it was lodged in her belly. And then, well, where was her confidence? Well, her confidence was kind of in her shoulders a little bit, you know, kind of blue. So we did one of the other tools, which is using color for healing, and I had to breathe in that blue confidence into that black fear and notice what happened. Well, what happened was it covered up the confidence. It covered up the fear, so the fear wasn't so apparent. But the fear was still there. So then we had to connect with the love that was in her heart. And when she breathed in love into her belly where the fear was, then the fear disappeared. The love was so powerful. So that meant for her that every day she could check in where her feelings were, her negative and her positive, and use the anecdote for whatever the negative feeling was. It's a very powerful method. And then if there's a little bit left over, you have a conversation with fear. Find out why fear is there and what it needs to do to go to sleep or leave. I had another girl who was very angry, and she kept fear. She kept anger in her knee as a big red bull, and she said it protected her from the bull and other people, which I thought was quite an interesting metaphor. And so, well, but it was getting her into a lot of trouble. So what could she do? Well, she first created a filter, kind of like a white filter that she kept around her throat so that when her bull came out, her anger came out, it would soften her words and it wouldn't come out so angry. And then what she did was she created, I think her animal friend gave her a gift of a love potion in her heart. And when she put the love potion over the anger, it put the anger to sleep, and it became very calm and peaceful.
Great. Well, how about talk to toes, talking to toes and other body parts?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, that's kind of, where do you keep your feelings? Where do you keep your anger? Is it in your toes? There was one boy who was, he had a younger sibling, a younger sister, who he thought he really wanted a younger sister, but once she came, it was a different story. So I asked him where he kept his bad feelings for his sister. He called them hate, and they were in his toes. And his love was in his heart. That wasn't a problem. But interesting, the following week when we got together, instead of hate being in the toes, it was really sadness. It turned into sadness, which was perfect, because usually under anger is sadness. So he was sad because he was missing out on attention. Mm-hmm. And when we then tried to send love into where the toes were, into his hateful, sad feelings, it went all the way down to his ankle, but it couldn't get past a closed gate. So then we had to speak to his toes and find out what was going on. And what that sadness needed was for him to spend more time with his mom. And so he kind of negotiated, how could he spend more time with his mom? Well, that feeling told him that if he helped his mom with the new baby, that would be good too, because he'd still be spending time with her. And once he figured out a way to spend more time with his mother, the gate opened and he was able to send love to that hateful, sad part. Mm. And that made a shift.
That's great. And how about energy? Tap into energy.
You know what? There's energy around us all the time. Think about it. Kids pick up on it. They know when something doesn't feel right. When we were talking about walking down the street, what are you picking up when you don't feel good? You're picking up on some energetic vibe. And so what you do is, a good way to experience it is if you just rub your hands together really fast, and then you just let them go very slowly, and you could feel the air in between your hands, and that's kind of like energy. But the most important energy is the love that's between people. So when you love your child, you could send them loving thoughts. You could imagine the love that's in your heart and imagine it pouring out your hands when you put your hand on your child's, back, sending lots of love there, or giving them a hug. You could send love out through your eyes. You could just bring all the love you have up for your child and send it out to them through your eyes so that they really feel it that way. And that's a very nice way to start being introduced to the concept of energy. And so sometimes you put your hand on, it's kind of like when you kiss the boo-boo, when something's wrong. Mm. That's sending loving energy to someone.
Mm. That's great.
I'll often have a parent, maybe when the child's falling asleep, because that's a really nice time when they let down their defenses, and they could just send their love through their hand and put it on their hand on their child's back and just pour lots of love in. Or I had another mom whose child is physically sick, and she would just imagine pouring sunshine from the top of his head down all through his whole body, and it would just light him up.
That sounds like a meditation, too.
Yes.
Sunshine is an image. Let me see if we have any emails. Raphael, do we have any emails that have come in?
Yes, Dr. Thompson, we do have several. The first one is, how many years have you studied in learning these techniques, and are these techniques considered holistic? That comes in from Nikki from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Gosh, I've been studying this for at least 25 years. You know, yeah, I was sort of meant to work with this because not only did I study psychology way back in college, but I studied art, and I happen to be left-handed and more right-brained, so it's very easy for me to work in pictures. So it was just sort of an easy transition for me, and when I was in the inner city and saw those kids needed so much, something different that would really touch them, I was fortunate enough to be at a conference where there was some educators talking about using imagery and guided imagery in their school system, and how when they went in week after week and led these children through some guided imagery over the course of a year, amazing things happened. Their grades went up, behavioral referrals went down to the office. Lots and lots of good things happened. So I was really struck by that. When I was touched by that, especially because they had us draw a picture, you know, it was just a meadow or something, it was no big deal, and I drew this, like, pathetic picture. But then when they led us through an imagery with lots of evocative language and beautiful words and then had us draw again, when I drew my picture, it was so much more beautiful. So I thought, there's something here. So then I started to look into it, and imagery has been used in imagination techniques and guided imagery and meditation techniques have been used so much with adults. There's lots and lots of research for adults. And the first person I think of, Bernie Siegel, is a very well-known surgeon who's worked with it. And then in the last 10, 15 years, there's been lots of research with children and using imagery and helping for headaches and tics and stomach aches and asthma control. Kids have reduced their asthma medication or gotten off of them. It's just this amazing amount of research. And for the person who's writing in, definitely go to my website. There's a lot of articles there. And if you just Google, you know, research, you'll come up with a lot. But I think when you're reading the book, you'll see I refer to a lot of studies. So you'll be able to get some resources there.
Okay. The next email says, are you a yoga practitioner by any chance? And that comes in from Deidre out of East St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
Yes. Are you a yoga practitioner by
any
chance?
No, but that's that. I would love to be. I do practice. I do yoga sometimes, but I could be so much better. But I know in a lot of yoga practices, they have some relaxation at the end of the yoga, which is very peaceful and relaxing. That would be a great thing. I have studied a little bit, but not nearly enough. But I do recommend it. It's a wonderful practice. There's a lot of research on the benefits of yoga as well.
Okay. The next question is, have you ever given up on an at-risk child that would not respond to your techniques?
Oh, I never give up.
Carmela from Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, never, never give up. You have to find a way to connect to that child. So if the child is into sports, I go with the sports. I had a boy the other day, he's into soccer. Okay, so can you imagine getting that ball into the goal? I teach them to use their imagery with whatever they're interested in. So think of Michael Phelps, who just won 8 gold medals last year. He said, with everyone saying it couldn't be done, all it took was a little imagination. So I will quote to the kids who are interested in sports, or I'll quote studies that will show how powerful imagery is. There's a really simple one with basketball where there were three groups and they shot from the foul line. And for 3 weeks, each group did something different. One group practiced shooting from the foul line for 20 minutes a day. One group imagined shooting from the foul line every day for 20 minutes. And the other one didn't do anything. And after three groups, of course, the group that didn't do anything didn't improve at all. But interesting, the two groups, both the one that just visualized and the one that actually practiced, improved pretty much the same, 23 and 24%. So you see how powerful your imagination can be. And every professional team has a sports psychologist helping with visualization. So that's a great way to introduce it. And so even if they're interested in getting a girlfriend, you know, for teenagers or a boyfriend, I will have them imagine already being with their new girlfriend, but maybe not putting a face on it, but just being with the date that's the best one for them. Doesn't matter who it's going to turn out to be, it's going to be the best one. And then you bring in all the senses, how they feel, what they say, what their parents say, all the positive things. So you just want to tap into whatever is important for that person. I never, ever give up.
Okay, the next email is it common for today's modern youth to entertain fantasy friends? That comes in from Carolyn out of Orlando, Florida.
Well, you know, they're using fantasy friends all the time on their video games. So even the teenagers. So you might say, oh, with an older kid like an animal friend, maybe it's just for a younger one. They're using it with the video game so they could really relate to it. And I don't have to tell them that this is really a part of themselves that they're connecting to. Although sometimes I might. I was working with a girl, and she was having trouble sleeping, and she said, when I close my eyes, this monster appears out from the side, and he was lumpy and bumpy and, you know, really, really an angry monster, and she drew him for me. And because I knew her and because she had been working so hard, I said to her, what part of you does he represent? Just like that. And she said, my anger. Immediately, she knew what he represented. And I don't often have to point it out to a child, because you don't have to, because it's a metaphor, because you work with, in the pictures, it's just as powerful. But she seemed like she was ready for that. And so then we negotiated with this monster. What would keep him quiet? What does he need to go away? And she needed more free time because she was working too hard, too much homework, having tutors all the time, in the morning before school, and she was missing an easy part of school with her tutors. So he wanted 2 hours of free time, but we negotiated him down to 1 hour free time a day. And that made her feel much better, and he went away, and she was able to sleep. So even the adults, when I give workshops, the parents get their own animal friend. But you know what? If they're not interested in animal friends, they can have a wise person come to them. You can imagine the wisest person you know. What would they say? If you're close to your parents, you can imagine what would mom or dad say to you, or what would your auntie say to you, or what would your favorite teacher say to you. It's all coming from inside you.
Okay, and the last email is, do the at-risk youth accept you right off the bat, or does it take time to gain their trust? And that comes in from Dylan out of Pomona, California.
Well, when I first started in the inner city, I looked quite different from these kids because I'm blonde, blue-eyed, and I was working with black and Hispanic kids. And they were probably looking at me like, what are you doing here? But, you know, I just connected to them on a heart level, because that's the most important thing. We all have hearts, and we all need love. And so I think they saw my sincerity after a while, and we connected on that level, and that made such a difference. So I don't really care. It doesn't matter to me if they react to me, but you know, they have a certain opinion because of the way I look, or they think I have a certain opinion of them, and they find out soon enough. No, we're all human. We're all here for the same reason. We're all trying to love. We're all trying to be the best we can be. We're all doing our best. We want to help each other. That's what we're here for. The world's going to be a better place when we can help each other out. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's great answer, and those were some great emails.
Yes, wonderful.
Yes, and I mean from all over the country, you know, and I think everything you're saying for the children can apply to adults. Do you think adults can use some of these techniques?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I've been doing this so long, and I had a grandmother, in fact, say to me at a talk recently, I'm going to get myself an animal friend, or I'm going to get myself a wizard. And it's true. It just happens to be that my specialty is working with children, but whenever I do workshops, I'm working with the adults. So I lead the adults, whether they're parents or they're professionals or educators, I lead them through the same exact techniques. You might change the language a little bit. It's the same thing. We're all trying to connect inside and capture that wisdom that we have. So I definitely encourage it. In fact, that's why there's a chapter, you'll notice, on parents, grown-ups need tools too, which is true. When was the last time you went to your special place or you received a gift from a wise person? It's the time is now.
Yes, and we have to fill ourselves up a lot of times before we can give to anyone. And so I think these are great kind of restitution or ways of making yourself, you know, reclaim some of what's taken away each day from you.
Yes.
Put it back in you.
In fact, there's one section on which I feel is really important, because to go back to day one and reparent yourself, if you're an adult or a child, because we never get, or hardly ever, I haven't met anyone yet, who has received all the love they want in the way they want it. So,
you know, that's why psychiatrists' couches are filled with people blaming their parents for what they didn't do. So that's a good idea. You go reparent yourself.
Yes, and I would do that with the kids, and I would take them back to birth and just have them imagine all the love that they want in just the way they want it. And I take them through from birth all the way up to the age they're at now, and then see themselves from that day forward moving on and how their life is going to shape up now and how wonderful it's going to be because they have love, received all that love, and see themselves in the future. And one girl saw herself, and this is back in the inner city, I remember her seeing herself as a doctor. In fact, she was the owner of the hospital. And one of the girls that I was very dear to me back then, I think she was in fifth grade when I knew her, and I would go into her class every week. And she tracked me down several years later, fifth grade, well, when she was in high school. I was at another school, and she told me, she was like the student body president, and she said, whenever I'm on stage about to make a speech, and when she did the speech to be elected, I remember something I learned with you. I remember standing on the top of the mountain of success. And what I would do is bring the children up, climbing the mountain, which is like life. It's a metaphor for life. And meeting their animal friends or their wizards that have all the tools that they need to climb that mountain and be successful and see themselves standing up there.
Oh, that's great. Let's talk about the seven ways to use art therapy. I remember seeing art therapy used with children who were victims of sexual molestation and how it was used sometimes to get them to open up. But, you know, it doesn't always have to be for negative things either.
Right.
So.
Right, right.
Talk about, and this hopefully that this is in a preventative way. How does art therapy help children?
Art is a wonderful way to release what's inside. It's very cathartic, just the act of drawing. And then once you have a picture on paper, you could work with the drawing. Sometimes when you put your fears on paper, they're not as scary, and you could work with it. There's one boy who drew a picture of a shark swimming in the ocean, and he was about to be, and he was in the ocean too, and he was about to be attacked by the shark. And I just said, gosh, could anything help save him? And he goes, oh, yeah, we could throw a life preserver to him. And that way, his parents could throw a life preserver. That way, he could be safe again. So he came up with his own resource. And the sharks in the ocean, well, those were bad things that were happening to him. So he could be helped. And so you could work with kids in that way. Sometimes I'll have them draw a portrait of themselves we'll draw, like, either I'll trace them if they're young on a big butcher block piece of paper, or I'll have them just draw their own outline and put where their feelings are, and it ties into the nine tools. Okay, so we'll start with some good feelings, like where do you keep your happy feelings? And then we'll do the opposite. Where do you keep your sad feelings? Where do you keep your brave feelings? Where do you keep your scared feelings? And draw a picture of it. Is it a blob? Is it a picture? Is it a shape? What color it is? And then it begins to start a dialogue. And then they could see, oh, their fear is kind of small. It's not as big as their confident feelings or their brave feelings. So you start to come at a problem or a situation from a different angle, which is kind of fun. It begins to have them get in touch with their own inner world. Or even like you want to see, where do you want to go? How is it now? Now that it's very dark and there's thunder and there's lightning. But where do you want it to be? I want it to be beautiful with butterflies and grass and the sun shining. Well, that's a beautiful, beautiful first step, because if you could picture how you want your life to be, then you could start taking the steps to get there. And in fact, sometimes there's a problem. This one child I'm thinking of that was a bedwetter, which could be totally embarrassing as you get older. And so we did a drawing of a path where she was at the beginning, and then the end point was staying dry. And then she'd find out, she'd draw for me where she was on her path, and then what was the first obstacle that she had to get over. And then we could bring in her animal friends and her wizards to help her get over her obstacles. So when you put things on paper, you really see how a child is seeing their world and seeing their problems. And even, I mean, if we go on, there's so many ways you could use art techniques and art therapy techniques. You could imagine he could draw his special place and where he's peaceful and loved and safe, and keep that up in his room, so that when things get down, he could remember that safe place that he could still go to. And parents should kind of remember to just, whatever their kids draw, to accept it. Because kids are so worried it's not perfect. As they get older, there's a lot of, you know, they know the difference between a good drawing and a bad drawing. And, you know, art is art. It's interpretation. So you want to reassure your child that whatever they draw is fine. And as we were talking, you could start talking to the images. It's better than talking to yourself. You talk to the fear. You talk to the brave part. You talk to the confidence. And you find out what it needs, either to grow or to get smaller. And sometimes, I don't know about you, but I love markers. And so there are all kinds of markers. There are shiny markers. There are sparkly markers. And there's these wonderful markers that are changeable. So that maybe you start out with a black, sad face, or angry, and then you change it to a happier color. And you could do that with these overwriter markers, which are kind of fun. So you could show you can change things. It's just sort of a metaphor for you to use.
Well, what was your goal when you wrote this book? Let's get back to your book and give out that title again and where your books are available.
The Power of Your Child's Imagination, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success. And it's available in most bookstores and online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And if you go to my website, which is imageryforkids.com, and it's F-O-R in the center, I have direct links right to all the places you could buy them. And back to your question of why I wrote the book, is so we can make kids' world. We could transform a child's inner world and make their worlds better and more beautiful and more peaceful and harmonious. And it doesn't cost anything. It's right inside.
Well, give an example of how a surviving parent might help a child who has lost her other parent in the war or from an illness.
Oh, yeah, I've seen kids who have lost parents, and it's kind of devastating. You don't ever get over the loss of a parent, but you can learn to live with it. And one thing that helped one girl I'm thinking about is going with what her faith was, and she believed her dad was in heaven. So when she could imagine him in heaven and imagine him looking down on her and imagine sending love from her heart to his, she felt a connection. She she imagined his hands, kind of his spirit hands, stretching down and visiting him in heaven. And it just, you have to go with whatever the child believes, because everyone believes something different. But I find a lot of times when they're younger, they do believe that there is a heaven. Then there's a teenage period where they don't believe in anything sometimes. But if you connect with what they believe, that really helps. If they don't believe in an afterlife or a heaven, then they could capture the memory of their lost parent inside and walk in their parent's steps. And if their parent was alive, how would they want them to see living their lives and to live like that? And would they imagine having a conversation with a parent?
Well, Dr. Resnick, how about when you worked in the inner city? Did you ever work with children who deal with the grief of having parents who have been missing in action due to crack and drugs? Because I'm sure the novel I'm working on now is related to what happened to the offspring of this second generation of crack and gangs and so forth, you know, the children.
I saw a lot of kids that were in foster care. A lot of times the grandparents took, the grandmothers took care of the kids because their own child was on crack or cocaine or worse. And the kids were, you know, kids could survive if they have some really positive influences. If they have even just one person that's a mentor to them, makes a big difference. And one child even told me, I know I don't have to have the life that my mother had. I know I don't have to have the life my father had, because I learned what not to do. Mm. So you don't have to always repeat a bad pattern. You could make a new pattern and have a better life.
That's great. You know, I was just wondering if you had dealt with that. So you covered a lot of it. I see you have some therapeutic relaxation CDs. Let's talk about those and where they're available, or if the listeners can buy them from your website.
Yes, they can just go right to my website. There are samples of the CDs. I felt it was really important to have the first CD I did was Discovering a Special Place, to have them connect to that safe place inside. Then I did one where you create, called Creating a Magical Garden and Healing Pond. And the idea of that is the magical garden is like your body growing healthy. And that really, that was used in a pilot study that really helped kids feel less pain after an operation and more relaxed than the kids that didn't use it. So it could be used for a lot of ways, for physical hurt, for emotional hurt, for spiritual hurt. And then I wanted them, as we were talking about the climbing a mountain of success, I was able to do that one as well. And then with the book, I really wanted parents and teachers and professionals to have the opportunity either to read the imageries to the kids and themselves, or to have the advantage of having my voice with the music in the background. So we have three CDs for them from the book. One, the 9 tools, because you want to have the 9 tools, so they're nice and short and brief, and you could practice with the kids all the time, the 9 tools. And then there are the imageries from the specific subject chapters. And then I felt it really important to have a support for parents, because parents' job is so challenging, as you know. Mm-hmm. So there's a special CD just for parents and supporting them.
Well, my final question is, parenting today is hard. What is your best advice for parents to help their kids succeed in life?
Trust yourself. Trust your intuition. Mm-hmm. Believe in yourself. And what kids need, they need honesty from you, they need patience, they need listening, they need structure, they need freedom connected to responsibility, they need you to be a good role model for them.
Well, that is great. Now, thank you so much, Dr. Resnick, for coming on the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. Please give out your website one more time, and also your email address, or any way that the listeners can contact you.
Sure. It's been a pleasure to be here also. My website is www.imageryforkids.com, and that's imageryforkids.com. And my email is very easy. It's drresnick@imageryforkids.com. And if people want to go to my website, they could get my top 10 tips on what kids really need from their parents and want from their parents. So directions for that are right on my website as well.
Well, that is great. Now, I wish you all the best with your book. Do you plan to do a series of books?
Oh, one book at a time.
But, you know, this is one that you could spin off, like the Chicken Soup for the Soul,
yes.
The power of your adult's imagination,
right.
The power of the teenager's.
Right, right.
You know, the grandparents' imagination.
Yes.
You know, with people having so much dementia and things like this might help the brain.
Yes, yes, of course. The more you use it, the longer it stays.
Yes, this is really exciting, and it's tied into something that I'm working on.
Good.
With education, this really helps.
Good, good. Inspiring. Inspiration, that's a good thing.
Yes, and I'll be able to have your book to open. A lot of these exercises, you know, I had to be reminded of the breathing and so forth. These are things that we need as adults.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for your kindness and your generosity and the good work you're doing with your radio show and your writing.
Oh, well, thank you very much, too. And, you know, you're welcome for coming on the show, and I look forward to you coming back with another book. Now there's pressure on you to write another one, because so many people have all these years of work experience and they don't write it down, so you're to be commended that you wrote it down so people can know, because a lot of people don't know what therapists do when they work with children.
Right, right. Well, everything's very simple. There are lots of tips for parents, and so it's very easy to use. It's a guidebook, it's a workbook, it's everything in one.
All right. Well, thank everyone for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. And I will see you next week. Love you all.
Thank you for joining this edition of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Hour. Dr. Thompson is the owner of Black Butterfly Press and Thompson's Literary Services. To learn more about Dr. Thompson, her literary services, or to listen to past guests, please visit the Artist First Archive page and visit MaxineThompson.com. Join us again, same mouse place, same mouse time, for the Dr. Maxine Thompson Hour. Right here on the Artist First World Radio Network.